This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
And we begin the Friday morning edition. Is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross here in downtown Las Vegas at Circus Sports. Our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. Wow, do we have a lot to get to here on a Friday morning. I thought potentially the NBA Finals could be over. It is not. Maybe what we're seeing already in Connecticut this week with Scottie Scheffler, rather stunning. I'll get to some numbers that I just saw posted here at Circa when I walked in this morning that I think you, sir, will find very, very interesting. And, of course, we have a lot to get to on the baseball diamond. But, Jensen, what a program we have coming up on this Friday morning. Thomas Gable is going to join us later on this hour right there from the Borgata in Atlantic City. Lou Finicaro, woo! Fight night, we've got it. Jamal Hill is now flipped to co-faves, minus -$1.10 before the main event here against Khalil Roundtree, something you and I have been looking at all week. We'll see what Lou thinks about that. Colin Wilson's going to join us here to break down the College World Series here as we get to LSU and Coastal, so it'll be good to catch up with Colin. And then, of course, Kelly Bidwin is going to be kind enough to hop in before he and Gil Alexander get on a numbers game, and he's going to hop on with us to talk about live betting here, specifically Scottie Scheffler and what you do in scenarios like this with what we saw after round number one. But, Jensen, I got to say, I walked in this morning, and I knew that Wyatt Tomchak was going to be helping to produce this show, right? And I just knew, because, you know, he walked in, he goes, that's one when the Braves beat the Mets 3 days ago.
Yes.
Then he came in, then he goes, that's two yesterday. So today, right when I saw his face, I thought, oh, what does he have behind his back? You know what he had, Jensen? He had this for me. If you can, if you're watching this, if you're watching this on VSiN.com or on the VSiN Watch app, he had the Dusters, the little Swiffer. They swept us away down there in the ATL. And Jensen, now I'm worried. We've given those you know what's new life down there in Atlanta, haven't we, as Met fans?
Wow. Well done. Well done, Wyatt. We said for those that had pronounced the Braves dead, reports their demise, greatly exaggerated. Alex Anthopoulos coming out and saying, under no circumstances are we trading Chris Sale.
How about that?
Wow. That's pretty definitive, because if there's anyone that's a man of his word, it's usually Alex Anthopoulos when it comes to those kind of things. So very anxious to see where this goes. Hey, all's fair in love and war. Just imagine if you were a Padres or Dodgers fan today, Dave, with the dust ups yesterday. You would need those Swiffers from what's happened the last couple of days.
Yeah, we were just talking about that, too, about maybe having your teammates back a little bit. And then all of a sudden you see some hijinks going on there with the Padres and the Dodgers. Padres salvaging one in that series, avoiding the sweep. But without further ado, let's get to it. The Friday edition of Highlights and Headlines.
Your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
You know what they say, Jensen, the best two words in sports, game seven. We're going to have a game seven Sunday night back in Oklahoma City. This one was really never in doubt, which might be the biggest surprise for the yesers, as Indiana gets a 108-91 win to force that game seven. We're already seeing prices now, money line prices. You got to lay about 330 on OKC at home and come back on the Pacers around plus 275 here at Circa. You see here the under, never in doubt yesterday with Oklahoma City. I believe that's a season low, 91 points. Not a playoff low, a season low. 108-91 that final. If you had Indiana on the money line, plus $1.50, cash that one relatively easily. Or if you had the 4.5, remember this was a size as 6.5, 7, comes all the way down to 4.5 once we got the news that Tyrese Haliburton would play. What's your takeaway, Jensen? Not so much from a three-all standpoint, but to me, it wasn't so much that Haliburton was a superstar. It was that his presence kind of felt like it buoyed and raised all tides yesterday for Indiana to really give them that life and belief that they could compete.
Well said. A rising tide lifts all boats, right. And that happened to be, the Haliburton Express there. not his finest shooting night whatsoever. Really hasn't been here in the latter stages of the NBA Finals. But Oklahoma City Thunder, no, sir. Indiana Pacers, yes, sir. This is, I tell you, and I thought once the Haliburton news came out that he was going to give it a go, I thought our over 221.5 was a pretty solid spot to be in. I'm glad I did play the under live because one of the most embarrassing first halves of an NBA team that I've seen in a while in a postseason setting, let alone an NBA Finals. Okay, so now this brings warm feelings to my heart. You remember, I remember, 2016. And I'll tell you the personal narrative of how now game seven of this series shapes up on a Sunday night. The Cleveland Indians then was finishing the postgame show. We were walking out of Progressive Field, Dave. And right next to us there at Gateway Plaza was then the queue. And we were going to have the watch party there. A lot of fans were, I mean, you could not find a parking spot. You could not get in anywhere in the bars. Everyone was ready to go in a scene of scenes there as the Cavs come back from being down 3-1. If the Pacers find a way to do this on Sunday night, what is the mayhem that ensues? Cool. In Indianapolis, in the Circle City, would it be a more triumphant comeback from the Pacers or one of the most distinguished, in a bad way, blown leads for the Oklahoma City Thunder?
You know, that's a great question. I think it's more, to me, it would be more to the side of Indiana was just flat out better than people in the betting market gave them credit for. And again, you and I talked about it before game one. I sat here and said, I really think this is a 6-7 game series. I thought it was going to be a long series. I felt like Indiana could compete with these guys. And this kind of, you know, uncrowned champion noise that I was hearing about OKC, I just didn't see it. Now, I mentioned a little bit of FOMO here off the top. You could have grabbed Indiana before game six last night at 10-1. And we talked about it a couple days ago that you could have also grabbed Pascal Siakam for MVP, right, at even a longer number, about 12-13-1. And now he's been shorted down to about 230 in the marketplace. And I'm not saying that those are necessarily going to get home for a game seven, but now you've got those ultimate hedge spots or try to find middles here on those tickets. You'd be sitting on gorgeous tickets. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is minus 220 to win the MVP, which is shorter than the money line price by over a dollar. So we could have navigated that market here and figured out different ways to play game seven and already taken our profit and run. So while I'm glad that we nailed the handicap here, I'm a little bit upset with myself that we didn't kind of find that great actionable spot here on Indiana and or Pascal Siakam. Now, I do wonder if Halliburton has a game seven of a lifetime and could he actually win the MVP by just playing last night? I know it was 14 points last night, but it was more that presence that he brought. Like Jensen, is that narrative done? Because really the talk is still about Halliburton and not so much Siakam.
Great that you brought that up. I saw a lot of people posting tickets after the first quarter, maybe even at halftime, where you could have gotten Tyrese Halliburton upwards of, I think, even 40-1.
Oh, wow.
Now, this wouldn't have been of last night, but I believe it would have been in the days leading up here to game six. He's 12-1 right now. How about TJ McConnell, by the way? Just a shout out to one of the great performances by a bench player in NBA Finals history. He's 130-1. So you're down to the big four. You're down to Shea. You're down to Siakam. Jalen Williams at 10-1. Halliburton 12-1. stranger things have happened here, but you're right. I mean, if Hallie has like a 30 plus, you know, hits six threes or something like that, you would envision David takes something like that, right, to overcome what Siakam's body of work has been.
Yeah.
I think that's the handicap. If you think it's a performance to remember, then you play the Halliburton 12-1 right now.
Well, I wish we had those Indiana in pocket tickets at 10-12-1 here going into a game seven. That'd be so nice. I know you're feeling really good about what you saw yesterday at River Highlands because Scottie Scheffler look, if you had Austin Ekroat at 8-under for first round leader and you got to have a cut or depending on how your books work out there. Scottie Scheffler runs him down, ties him in the clubhouse lead at 8-under. But Scottie did have it. He did push it to 9 with a late bogey on 17 to make that 8-under. But again, shoots a 62 there in Connecticut. And you grabbed him, I believe it was plus 330. Is that right? Right,
yeah.
As our show was going on yesterday. Is that what you have Scottie on?
Correct, yes.
Okay, I've got a number for you that I have not seen. And I mentioned it right off the top. When I walked in this morning here behind me at Circa, they now have a yes-no prop on Scottie to win the tournament. The no is plus money. You've got to lay about, I think it's $1.42. I'll get the exact number here when I walked in, Jensen. But again, we're getting in the Tiger Woods type care. You get the field today. You can have the field for the whole weekend at plus money against Scottie Scheffler.
Wow.
We haven't seen this stuff in a long time in golf betting. Again, I can't wait to talk to Kelly about this too at the end of the show. But Jensen, would that intrigue you now that you already have a plus 330 ticket on Scottie? You could immediately hedge if you wanted to. Take the other side. Take whatever small profit you want to make and move along.
DraftKings, I was just going to look and see, because I am on DraftKings there with Scottie, and I wanted to say that they were offering me, I put 100 down to win 330.
Okay.
They're offering a cash out of 191.48 right now. Obviously, we're not taking that.
No.
Better question for you, because, and credit DraftKings, you get I've received one of those boosts that you can use on any market. Would I want to try and double? Would I want to get selfish here, Dave? Let's say that Scottie runs away with it. Get into the winner without market and boost someone up there. Anyone interest you in that field?
You better believe it. And we'll get into that because I got a name for you. Well, let me just put it this way. A plus $1.12 is the no on Scottie. And you got to lay $1.32. Is that right, Danny? Yeah. So Danny Higgins, our fine producer, stepping in this week for Brandon Valesky. So you got to lay $1.32. You get plus $1.12. You get the whole field. By the way, you know who had the most birdies yesterday in round one? Cam Young. Cam Young had 8 birdies. Scottie had 7 and an eagle.
Let's go.
Austin Eckroat had 6 and an eagle. Cam had 8 birdies. He did have a double bogey and a bogey. That's why he was 5 under and not 8 under. Much more golf to get to. But when we come back, it's our edition of the Daily Diamond. Next.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis here on a Friday edition. I'm going to catch up with Thomas Gable a little bit later on this hour there from the Borgata in Atlantic City. I'll be very curious, Jensen, as to what the money is going to look like for a Game 7. And I don't know that a lot of people thought we'd get to a Game 7. Like, do you think now that people are going to start buying into Indiana all of a sudden and believe, with a blowout win and Halliburton's playing and, you know, SG, they did. Jalen Williams, these guys did not look good at all in a Game 6. I wonder if people are starting to believe that Indiana actually could win this series.
Yes. I mean, because as we know, Game 7, anything can happen. And the shooting woes, again, that's going to be fresh in the mind of Oklahoma City. And so if I were Rick Carlisle, by the way, shout out Rick Carlisle for having the boys come out to Many Men. That was phenomenal last night. Just well done all the way around. I do think that there is a little bit of jitters there on Sunday night. If you're OKC, of like, okay, we kind of get, I mean, remember they're out to a 10-2 start. And then, the walls came crashing down. So I'm with you, buddy. I think there is something to be said. You get a couple of days to marinate on it and hopefully it's out of sight, out of mind when they get home, because boy, it has been a tale of two different places. They go on the road. Well, there's been some trepidation there, and then they come back home, and it's a completely different ball club.
I mean, guilty as charged. At 10-2, I kind of thought, oh, boy, this thing might get ugly. And then all of a sudden, once that comeback flipped, that game was over by the third quarter. All right, let's get to it without further ado. Today's edition of the Daily Diamond. I love the games you play, Jensen Lewis, and we're going to have some brain teasers today and some numbers associated with some teams that maybe in the rear view are closer than they appear.
I just found a couple of these futures markets intriguing, and let's start here in the American League. Said it at the beginning of the year. We'll say it again. We're almost 3 months into the season, and they still don't think we have a lot of things figured out outside of the Detroit Tigers have been very good this year in the American League. So that being said, let's play a little Would You Rather, Dave, and I have two different markets for you. The first is to not make the postseason.
Whoa.
Okay. Right now, plus $1.20 on the Rays, plus $1.20 on the Blue Jays. Would you rather add the Rays not to make the postseason ticket to your pocket or the Blue Jays?
Well, here's my concern. I've got to know which one of these teams are going to play it out before the trade deadline and not get reinforcements. I have a feeling, and you're so much better at this, knowing these GMs the way you do, that the Blue Jays might be a team that buys and says, we are in the mix, right? We're going to get Max Scherzer back, I believe, at some point, right? Can we count on Max at some point in the second half? And if you
probably
right, mm-hmm. And if you can, that's an addition right there without having to spend. And then you spend a little bit on top of getting Max Scherzer back. I don't know, though, I want to be in the position of fading the Blue Jays, but the Rays have been such a great story. And we know they kind of have a template that they don't like to rock that boat, right? I don't know that I see the Rays buying, even though they're clearly right there, 8 games over .500. If you made me play one, which I wouldn't, I would take Tampa Bay at that plus money ticket to say they're going to be the team on the outside looking in.
All right. With that being said, then second part of a would you rather today, the current leaders as far as their divisions go. Yankees, Tigers, and Astros in the American League. Your Mets, hang in there. Mets, Cubs, and Dodgers. Okay, this was as of yesterday before play. Would you rather have the current division leader parlay ticket for the American League at plus $1.32 or the National League at plus $1.61?
Wow. Okay, here's the problem with the plus $1.61. Is that, as you mentioned, the Mets, my Metropolitans, are now tied with the Filthy Phils at atop the division with the exact same record here, 45-30. The Dodgers, losing last night to the Fathers, they now have a 3.5-game lead over the Gigantes, 5 games over San Diego, 8 over Arizona. Still feels pretty good, but still only 3.5. And then the Cubs, and they're pitching. 5.5 over Milwaukee and St. Louis, 6.5 over our Reds. I think I'd play the American League because Houston now is the one bugaboo there. I don't know that anybody's going to run down Detroit. I still think if the Yankees need to go buy, they'll buy. I have to believe that before the deadline, right? I don't think the Tigers, I mean, getting back Flaherty, I thought last year after trading him to the Dodgers in the offseason was a coup. So they got back their player that they traded. At this, you know, they didn't know they were going to make this great run in the second half this time last year. Houston's the one worry there, but I think Jensen, I play the shorter price and play the American League parlay at a plus $1.32.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you there because I do feel we're going to hear from the Phillies there in the National League East, and then the Cubs should be able to take care of business. But boy, we've seen the Cubs do Cubs things before. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know. Once the Dodgers start to get some of these reinforcements from a health perspective, I think they're in great shape. With that being said, we always love to play around at this point. Now that we have a pretty solid sample, right? 70 plus games, we start to see some separation as far as, or lack thereof, as far as the American League goes. Here's some World Series exactas for you, Dave, based on just the seeds they currently occupy. All right, the Tigers and the Cubs. Who would have thought, right? They're right now, playoff start, they're the number one seeds. 30-1 on that World Series exacta right now, if you want to play it. The Astros-Dodgers rematch of World Series gone by. Probably not a good one for Dodger fans there. 14-1, little shade over 14-1. They would be your number two seeds. Number three seeds, you Subway Series fanatics out there, still get a good price, 18-1. Rays and Phillies rematch of what, the 2008 World Series, if I remember, that's 77-1,
right?
The Blue Jays and the Giants 168-1.
Oof.
And then the Guardians and the Padres almost 400-1. Any one of those stand up? Well, the easy one I know is the Mets and the Yankees.
It is.
Of those matchup exactas, what do you like?
Well, I will say this. I'm still scarred by the last Subway Series. Bobby Jones, game four, first pitch, Derek Jeter take some yard and the series is over. I still am not over that, so I don't know if I'm ready for a repeat of that. I got to say that it would be, I can't believe the number one seed, you can get it over 30-1, plus 30-60.
Yeah.
Like, look, I am worried about the Cubs pitching. You and I talked about it yesterday in a short series. Like, do they have enough pitching, really, to scare a bunch of really good teams in the National League to even get there, to get through and win the pennant? I'm not sure, but I know I got Scooble. I know I got Flaherty if I'm Detroit. So I'd feel more confident about Detroit getting through in the American League side, but I'd bite at the longer number here at plus 30-60, assuming that the Cubs act like a big market team at the deadline and go get another ace. They need more pitching, right? The lineup is great. offense is fine. I feel like they should know by now they need one more frontline starter.
And maybe two. Or if those resources are too expensive, you know, and here's the irony. The back end of their bullpen is dead last in strikeouts per nine. If there is anything we have found in the last decade of postseasons, you must have relievers that can get swing and miss. So two ways to win there. You might almost like Cleveland Guardian it, where you're not going to get a boatload of run from your starters, and then you just load up on guys that are premium swing and miss leverage relievers. So that'll be intriguing. All right, buddy. Tomorrow we get the College World Series Championship Series underway. Would you rather do a little go Shants or go Tigers? Here is the fun part about looking at where these matchups end up. You talked about FOMO with the Pacers series. Before the regional started, before the field of 64 got underway, you could have gotten Coastal Carolina at 25-1 to win the national title. The Tigers, one of the betting favorites there, plus 650. Really not too much has changed here. $1.90, you got to lay for them to win, plus $1.55 for Coastal Carolina. It's going to be a great series. It's going to be really good. Excited to talk to Colin Wilson coming up at 9 a.m. Eastern hour. But just always fun, a little revisionist history, my friend. 25-1. You could have had Teal Nation in the back pocket.
I will say this, kudos to you, Jensen, because you were all over the Shants and said this is not a Cinderella. Like that 25-1 number did stand out. That was a very playable number. So I think at this juncture, I did see, not that I'm out there looking at what Livy Dunn is posting. She did post yesterday, though, when the Tigers and her hubby-to-be, I believe, Paul, they're not married yet, I don't believe. Paul Skeens was on the
ball. No, not engaged yet. He's doing the right thing. He's taking his time.
They're having fun.
Attaboy.
And she just posted a Not My Tigers. So, like, she's good.
That's
Tigers.
That's fantastic.
Right? So, like, for her headset, she's fully indoctrinated here in LSU and her alma mater and Paul Skeens. I think I'd take the Shants at plus 650, I think, for a little fun bet there. Because I do think, man, you get to the stage. Why not us? I'm sure they believe very much so they can win the College World Series against LSU. You want to bet those ponies? We got you covered with our friends over at First Bet. You sign up now, you're going to access exclusive promotions, bet on hundreds of thrilling horse races each and every day right from your phone and or computer. Visit firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. And use promo code VEASAN200 to score a 20% rebate on all of your wagers for the first 60 days, up to $200. Don't miss out. Start betting today at firstbet.com.
You're tuned in to VEASAN by the Books right here on VEASAN.
We are back. VEASAN by the Books. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis getting ready for round number two. We'll get underway shortly here at River Highlands. And, of course, now, as we all know, Scottie Scheffler is the odds-on favorite to win this golf tournament after one day because he's tied for the lead with Austin Ekroth at 8-under par. Now, Jensen, there are a couple other stories that I wanted to get to here in regards to this. And from a betting perspective, if you want to hop in and go against Scottie, Godspeed, Challenger. It's going to be really hard to beat that guy over the next 3 days. Got to tip my cap to Rory McIlroy, okay? He played lights out yesterday, 6-under par. He's 2 off the lead. The talent, nobody doubts the talent of Rory McIlroy. It's a generational player. I think I certainly doubted the head and where he was coming into this tournament. So there he is now as a second betting choice live. What'd you make of Rory very quickly? He's now plus 650. You got to lay money. Odds on, as I mentioned, $1.40 on Scheffler. There's Austin Ekroth making the big move to 25-1. Great first round. I don't know that Austin Ekroth's going to hold up on an elevated event field, the final elevated event of the year for the PGA Tour. So it's the class of the class on the PGA Tour. Keegan Bradley, really good day as well at 16-1. But what do you take away from Rory yesterday? I don't know that I want to fade him. You can play him top five at minus $1.25 here, but I don't know that Rory, this is crazy to say, has got 4 days like in him like he did yesterday. Scottie, I don't think anybody doubts that.
Yeah, and I think it's fair. And I watched pretty much all of that round between, or at least with Rory and with Keegan Bradley. And shout out to a great friend of the program, Adam Schefter, watches us every day, and he was really good on in between the ropes there with his football comps. Those guys had a great question for Keegan at the end of his round. But I'm with you. I don't know, and I mean, credit where it's due. This is the Rory I think we kind of thought we might see.
Sure. That we expect.
U.S. Open.
Yes.
But yeah, I'm with you, man. I'd rather have the big dog in pocket like I got, because I don't know if Rory will be motivated, more importantly, to do it.
And again, what I do think it shows is if Rory's body language is that he's checked out, right? That's kind of what we've been getting at. That the talent is still flippable. They can still flip that switch, even if mentally he's not all there. I know Scotty's there. I know these other guys are there. There's one other player that we should take note of that's moved up the odds board to 35-1 after a great day yesterday. That's Wyndham Clark. Now, Wyndham Clark, where have you been, Wyndham Clark? Remember, he beat Rory to win the United States Open a couple years ago at LACC. And Wyndham, full of confidence, I'm one of the best players in the world. He has fallen off, shall we say, to a degree. And Wyndham is very motivated here. He's not even right now eligible for the FedEx Cup playoffs, let alone the Ryder Cup team. So some of these players are really trying to jockey for those positions. At the U.S. Open last week, there was an incident inside the Oakmont locker room. The locker room at Oakmont. If you're watching on the VSiN Watch app or on VSiN.com, you're seeing the picture. If you can't see the picture, we'll try to describe what Odd Shark put up on X. Wyndham Clark put the name out there. Allegedly damaged multiple lockers in the legendary Oakmont locker room after missing the cup on Friday. Acceptable behavior? Question mark. I think we can answer that would be a no if you were kicking in the lockers at Oakmont. Now, Jensen, I didn't want to rush out there because, being a journalist the way we are, because I didn't know who did it. I saw Wyndham's name associated with it, and I thought, are U.S. Open champions smashing in lockers at Oakmont when they miss the cut? Is this a real thing? It can't be. Wyndham Clark, great round yesterday, 6-under par, addressed the media, Rory McIlroy, addressed the media after his round yesterday and said this.
I've had a lot of highs and lows in my career, especially this year, some lows. And, I made a mistake that I deeply regret, and I'm very sorry for what happened. But I'd also like to move on, not only for myself, but for Oakmont, for the USGA, and kind of focus on the rest of this year and things that come up. I still want to try to make the Ryder Cup team. I still am on the outside looking in for the FedEx Cup, and I, so I'm starting to move on and focus on those things.
Okay, I've got a two-part evaluation of that soundbite. First part, A+. A++++. One, you spoke to the media. You didn't dodge anybody. You went out there and you faced the music and you owned up to it. You didn't say, I don't know what you're talking about. You could have played it. People do this all the time. Where they're like, it's the Jedi mind trick. Like, maybe I did. Maybe, like, I don't know. What are you talking about? He owned it. He did it. We all, mystery solved, Scooby-Doo, the kids, you don't have to search any longer. Wyndham Clark kicked in the lockers at Oakmont, and it's really Bush League. So kudos to that. Second part of it, Jensen, it might be a C-. You just move on from it. It just happened 10 minutes ago. Do you get the golden pass that easily just for admitting it to the media and to the fans to move on? Is that fair of Wyndham to now say, all right, guys, I've admitted it. Now I want to focus on the future, and that's in the distant past, even though it's not so distant.
No, and I would say that, obviously, in a Lewis Ross administration, you are innocent until proven guilty.
That's right.
The evidence continues to mount, though, against Wyndham Clark. And I think a jury of his peers would certainly be looking at him beyond a reasonable doubt. All that being said, he could have really acquitted himself quite well had before leaving get to management at the property and say, forgive me.
Yes.
I have sinned. And I, you know, again, in a fit of rage, this is certainly out of character for me. This is not who Wyndham Clark is. I ask forgiveness for what I've done. And whatever I can do to make this right, I want to make it right. And I would have to believe the people at Oakmont would have come out in his defense to a certain extent and said, listen, this happened. We're being transparent. He came to us immediately. It was completely his fault. And he would have looked eons better in the public eye than he does right now. I do think he's guilty. Again, I have not seen the jury foreman come out and read the official verdict.
He's guilty.
I mean, the smoke rises the way it does. And old Wyndham going to have some imagery and some branding rehab to do, if you will.
I believe the legal term would be a preponderance of evidence. Right, we have a preponderance of evidence against Wyndham Clark here.
Overwhelming and convincing.
Yeah,
yes.
But seriously though, I think you're spot on in the fact, like, Oakmont deserves the apology, right? Like, you should have gone to Oakmont, right? This shouldn't have been some clouded mystery. What did you do? Kick in Johnny Miller's locker or Arnold Palmer's locker?
Right.
Like, what are we doing here, Wyndham Clark? And I will say this: he's a guy that Wyndham's story a little bit. He has been mercurial. He has been a guy that's had anger issues in the past. That is not an excuse. None of that is an excuse to behave like that at the U.S. Open at Oakmont and to kick in multiple lockers. I can only imagine if you're in the clubhouse going, what is this guy doing? Like, you got to be flipping out if you see this activity. But he is up there in the leaderboard. Again, another guy mentally, when you see that, Jensen, it shows me you're hanging on by a thread, buddy. Like, you're hanging on by the smallest of threads if you try to stay in the hunt here at 35-1. Not a guy I'm going to play. Look, we gave out Cam Young at 50-1, and he's right there at 500 par. I really like where his head's at. And look, he runs hot too, but he's not kicking in lockers at Oakmont. But I do think there's a difference. And Jensen, I don't know, for you as an athlete, did you play with guys that were always on edge like that, that you felt like, man, you look at them, you say the wrong thing, and all of a sudden they're going to just lose it?
I do have one quick story. Kerry Wood, in his return, first time to Wrigley Field, gave up back-to-back walk-offs. And in the second one, we came to the locker room door or the clubhouse door, and we were told we have to wait a little bit. And as we entered, we could smell, and then all of a sudden we smelled burnt wood. And it was our closer ended up going with a wood bat to the lockers and taking out his frustrations on the lockers. So safe to say that Woody ran hot at certain points. So, oh yeah, we deal with some high wire acts. There's no question about it.
And that's where you just kind of like, I'm going to stay clear of that tornado right now and just stay at it.
You probably grab your phone and you just step outside, make a couple of quick calls. Sure. And then, as they say, to let the proverbial dust settle before you go ahead and take care of things. Yes.
I'm glad Wyndham is much calmer. I'm sure Kerry Wood is much calmer as well. If you want to bet smarter, check out VSiN.com each and every day to start off your day with great insights here. Greg Peterson, of course, great job last night of cashing out. He's got his Major League Baseball best bets for you. Fight night. Hill and Roundtree. This is an interesting line moves here. Those best bets are already up. Churchill Downs picks are there if you want to bet the ponies. So again, as well as $9.99 to access all these pro articles when you go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Of course, our Game 7 previews for Sunday night. JVT's got his Major League Baseball picks and props. And Zachary Cohen has got his tennis best bets. It's all there for you. VSiN.com/subscribe.
To VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the Books on this Friday morning edition. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis. Jensen, we always love on a Friday to catch up with our buddy Thomas Gable. Does a great job at the Borgata in Atlantic City. Give him a follow and at T Gable Sports, rather, on X. Does a great job there. Good humor on X as well. Joins us now in the Progressive guest line. And by the way, I mean, Jensen, we really do have to figure out a buy the books on the road at the Borgata at some point. Like, we got to make that happen.
All for
we?
It.
Yeah.
All for it. We got the man. We need to ask to make it happen.
We got to get there, Thomas, and check it out in person one day. We're going to do that at some point. We were talking, Jensen and I, a little bit off the top of the show. Obviously, when you get to a game seven, like we're going to have Sunday night at OKC between the Pacers and the Thunder, you have to believe now that it's obviously tangible for Indiana to win this series. But I wonder, Thomas, in the betting market, are you seeing that now? Are they Johnny-come-latelys to say that Indiana can actually pull this off Sunday night?
Well, I guess the question is, why would it start now? We haven't seen this yet.
Wow.
Nobody believed on the Pacers, and here we are going into Game 7 of the NBA Finals. No, I mean, this has been a team that literally nobody believed in them against the Cavs. Nobody believed in them against the Knicks, and certainly no one believed in them here against Oklahoma City. And last night, certainly the way that the betting was happening for that game and the way the action was coming in, everybody seemed to think this series was going to be over. And this morning we'd be talking about the Thunder as the NBA champions. So we get one more game now. And even though Oklahoma City is going back home here, where they certainly have had more success than they have had on the road, things have going to get tight here a little bit for the Thunder. There's no doubt. Now, as soon as we opened up the numbers last night after game six, you saw it again, people jumping in on Oklahoma City immediately on the opening numbers. You know, the money line we already raised for this one. We opened at 350 on the Thunder. People jumped on that up to 375 now.
Wow.
We're going to take back $3 on the Pacers, so you can still get 3-1 if you want Indy to win the title. So it's going to be interesting. But again, I think just everybody is counting out Indiana once again. It's pretty amazing that here we are going into Game 7 of the NBA Finals, and this is a team that no one really has backed too much in the betting market.
Really remarkable, TG, and a conversation that Dave and I had in the days leading up to Game 6 was, you know, what to do with Tyrese Halliburton. As we stand here right now, basically just four selections that are viable in the MVP market. Would you dabble at all at Halliburton at 12-1? And with the caveat of, you would assume that he has to have just a 30-plus point performance outshine Pascal Siakam for what Siakam has done for the majority of this series. Any interest in that in the MVP market, or is this a complete stay away and you're just looking at the game overall?
Yeah, for me, I would definitely not back Halliburton. To your point, it would have to be a monster game from him. Obviously, a Pacers win, first and foremost, a monster game from Halliburton, and then Siakam would have to have somewhat of an off game, because remember, Halliburton had that game where he didn't have a field goal in just two games ago. Now, so to make up for that, I think would be a little bit too much. I think it would be, if you're looking at a Pacer winning the MVP, it's got to be Pascal.
Yeah, it would have to be almost like a Willis Reed situation, what, in 73 when he comes out there and he's limping and he only plays like 7 minutes, but yet we always talk about Willis Reed in that game for the Knicks. I wonder Halliburton would have to do. It can't just be showing up like he did last night with 14 points. It'd have to be a monster game to get that done. By the way, the total is as low as we've seen in the series. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it was a dead under last night here in game six. Do you expect that number to keep coming down, Thomas, before we get to tip off on Sunday night? People thinking, all right, if it is going to be tight, it's going to be jittery, it's a game seven, it's 215.5 here at Circa here in Las Vegas. What do you expect that number? Where do you think that might go?
You know, the market adjusted slightly overnight. Some spots open 215, 214.5. Now you're seeing 215.5. I think it's going to stay probably right around that range, 215-ish, for when we close this out. But again, it's a game seven. You expect both teams to come out a little bit tighter. Game may not flow up and down the court as you typically would see more half-court sets. So that's why that total's lower. It's always going to be lower there for game seven. But I don't think you're going to see too much more movement here from where this is at right now, 215.5. 215.5, I think is pretty much where this is going to stay.
Yep, I love it. Anxious to see it. First game seven since my Cavaliers were able to go into Golden State in 2016 and be able to win. Gosh, kind of a lot's happened since then. kind of a lot's happening in the AFC South here as we get ready for training camps getting underway in earnest here at TG coming up in a handful of weeks. Dave and I have gone through some of the alternate win totals of a lot of these different divisions. We did a little worst to first yesterday. I think we targeted, if there was any team that would do it, it would be the Tennessee Titans, just considering what the division is. Now, again, it's still a bit more of a long shot, but handicap the division for us and potentially any of these win totals that stand out to you on the alternate side.
Yeah. I mean, we can start with the Titans there at 8-1 to win the AFC South. And obviously have number one overall pick in Cam Ward. And, you know, I think we should keep expectations somewhat tapered here with Ward. Certainly, I mean, Ward certainly seems to have the work ethic and demeanor to come in here and make an impact right away. They picked up ex-Seahawks veteran wide receiver there in Tyler Lockett. And of course they have Dave's boy, Tony Pollard, as their running back one. You know, this team, I think, is probably still at least a year or two away from seriously contending with the Texans for the division, but their season win at 5.5 has been intriguing. Mostly money coming in on the over is what we've been seeing here for the Titans. But I mean, this is for the Texans. I mean, honestly, I think this is their division to lose. You know, year three of CJ Stroud, yep. He seemed to take a step back last season after his brilliant rookie season, but they made some changes on the offensive side of the ball that certainly should help. They were dealing with injuries, a wide receiver, as we know. They had issues with the offensive line, and those offensive line issues really led to Stroud. He took the second most sacks in the NFL last season. So they brought in some veteran linemen. They just got Nick Chubb as another running back to go along with Joe Mixon. Their receiving core is very strong. And honestly, with the question marks surrounding the other teams in this division, the Texans should be the class of the AFC South again, but they do have a tough schedule in front of them right from the jump. All their non-division games in the first 5 weeks are against playoff teams from a year ago. Week one, they come out, their dogs on the road to the LA Rams. So, I mean, you can still get a plus price on them to win this division. And you look at the other two teams there with Indy and Jacksonville, who are priced pretty much the same, right around 3-1, same season win total for both the Colts and the Jags at 7.5. The Colts, I can't take seriously as a division contender. We aren't quite sure where Anthony Richardson's at. We know the physical skills there, but a lot of questions surrounding him. And of course, they now have Daniel Jones, who originally you thought was going to be coming in here as the backup, but in training camp, there probably will be a quarterback competition there. And, you know, they drafted the great tight end out of Penn State, Tyler Warren. I think it's going to be an intriguing camp here for Indy. But I wouldn't be investing any money in the Colts futures right now. And then leads us to Jacksonville. Again, 3-1 here for the division. Like the Colts, still long-term questions at quarterback with Trevor Lawrence, who still has yet to live up to expectations. But they have one of the most watched rookies in the league here in Travis Hunter. Hunter wants to play both sides of the ball. We'll see if the Jags will allow that. You know, this isn't college, and we know the physicality of the game is on a completely different level here in the pros. But if I had to pick out the Colts and Jags as to who will have the better season, I would personally lean Jaguars right now. But I think Tennessee is going to be an interesting team to watch this year. I really do. There's been some nibbles on them at 8-1 to win the division. But definitely the Texans here, while people can still grab plus price, that's really where we've seen the money come in, as well as on the over of their season wins here at 9.5.
I'll say this, Thomas. Excuse me. I see it the exact same way. I'm a believer in what D'Amico Ryans has built in three short years, now going into year three. With C.J. Stroud at plus money to win that division, I would play it the same way. Plus $1.15 there, or 8-1 is a long shot with the Titans. Don't hate those plays at all. Thomas, appreciate it. As always, my friend, enjoy the weekend. We'll catch up again next week.
All right. Thanks, Dave. And big series coming up for your Mets here this weekend.
Can we win a game, Thomas? What's going on?
It's been a struggle. It's been a struggle. Now you got to face Wheeler tonight.
Well, that's just great. 0-6 in our last six. Thomas Cable, appreciate the time as always.